From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Washington Post on Thursday revealed that the Biden administration is preparing a major shift to immigrant family detention in the U.S. According to the paper, which obtained a draft Homeland Security plan, the government will, quote, convert its immigrant family detention centers in South Texas into Ellis Island-style rapid processing hubs that will screen migrant parents and children with the goal of releasing them into the United States within 72 hours. Meanwhile, about 105 migrant families separated by the Trump administration have been reunited since Biden took office. Hundreds more children remain away from their parents who are known to have been deported back to Mexico or Central America. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas also said recently that reunited families would be offered the option of having legal pathways to remaining in the United States. My guest is Dr. Amy Cohen, Executive Director and co-founder of Every Last One. She's also a child and family psychiatrist who spent much of her career addressing the psychological trauma issues of vulnerable populations of children and families, and she focuses on asylum-seeking children. Welcome to the program, Dr. Amy Cohen.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali. I appreciate it.
So the last time we had you on, it was before Biden took office. Of course, yes. There is a strong difference between the Trump administration and the Biden administration, simply on rhetoric. And Biden has overturned a number of executive orders that Trump had in place. But let's focus on the worst aspects of the Trump era, which were the hundreds of families where parents were separated from their children. Understandably the worst. And we know that even though a courts have had ordered the Trump administration to reunite children, that the Trump administration, in its last months in office, was simply refusing to cooperate, not giving lawyers the information they needed. So what has happened since Biden to those families that had remained separated until January 20th?
Well, first of all, forgive me, but I want to challenge one of the statements that you've made. I think that the zero tolerance program, as horrible as it was, does not represent by any means the only means by which the Trump administration policy separated children from families, nor does it frankly represent the most atrocious programs which most severely traumatize children. I would argue that those programs are MPP, the Migrant Protection Protocol, rather ironically named program, in which children and families have been tortured for some of them up to 2 years.
So you're referring to the Remain in Mexico program, which, because it's correct, been sort of out of sight of American eyes because it's happening across the border, isn't being as widely covered. In fact, the last time you and I spoke, it was about that issue as well.
Correct. And that, I think, when, as we spoke about last time, really does represent another child separation program, because children were so endangered in these horrible cities in Mexico, in which the United States was forcing them to stay for this long period of time, that families were compelled to send them across the river by themselves, rather than face more kidnappings, assault, rape, murder, things that we saw universally transpiring with families who are in the Remain in Mexico program. We also know that there are upwards of 13,000 children who were expelled on their own under Title 42. And we have no idea where they are. We know that many of these children were expelled despite the fact that they had parents here in the United States and were fleeing their countries of origin in order to join those parents. Some of these children were as young as 4 years old. And they were turned around and sent back without any concern whatsoever for what or who they were being sent back to. And many of them returned to places where they had no home, no caretaker, nobody to look after them. Many of them were being sent back to places where they faced serious trafficking. And we have not tracked any of these children. We have not put together any way to find any of these children. And again, we're talking about upwards of 13,000 children, some as young as 4 years old. So we are quite convinced that some of these children have at this point probably died, either through illness and neglect or through murder, which a number of them faced, or currently being trafficked, or are perhaps out on the streets because they were removed from the only people who could have cared for them, and that's the family that's in the United States.
Has the Biden administration attempted to discover what happened to those families? I understand that Biden has tried to take steps to at least end the Remain in Mexico program, right?
Correct, yes. So there have been no steps taken that I'm aware of, nor my contacts in these countries are aware of, to locate these children, to ascertain their condition, to ascertain their circumstances. There's been absolutely no effort in that direction. That's once again remained a hidden program, which, you know, has fallen out of the consciousness of American citizens. And the MPP program, there are two other things. First, the MPP program, which is, thank goodness, ending, and people are crossing over. But many of those people have had horribly traumatic situations. Their children have been exposed to trauma. The most traumatized children I've seen in my 30 plus years of treating trauma are children who have been in MPP. And I know of no services being offered to these children's families. I know of no opportunities that are being given to these people who were tortured, who really were forced to live in hell for some of them, as I said, 2 years. But in addition to that, there are people who are in the MPP program the longest who are not being given permission to come into the United States because they were the ones who were first processed through what were often sham courts. And
so because they were already sort of dismissed by the government in a formal way, they are on record as not being allowed back in?
Correct. That's exactly right. The only people who are being officially allowed back in are people with active MPP cases who have not received removal orders. And again, those removal orders were rubber stamped. They were just, you know, handed out like candy in addition to the very rapid processing with very little consideration of some of the claims of these people, some of which are transparently supportive of asylum, of their capacity to seek asylum. In addition to that, there were no attorneys that were available to them because it was impossible for most attorneys to come across the border. So those who were in Mexico did not have access to attorneys. And we know that having an attorney makes an enormous amount of difference in terms of one's capacity to win one's case. But in addition to that, I want to make it very clear that children are very much continuing to be separated from parents.
Even now.
Children who are coming by themselves are not being allowed to go even when they have parents in this country to
those
parents.
Let's talk about that, because Biden did come under fire for reopening a facility that was opened under Trump that had been criticized, but some pointed out that, well, this was being run by the Office of Refugee, the ORR Office, Refugee Resettlement, and that the kids would only be held, ages, most of them 13 through 17, only held for 72 hours at a time. Now we're hearing, there's actually news saying that on average they were being held for 77 hours, which is just a few hours more than about 3 days, and are potentially being released into the country. What do you know of that?
So we're talking about two different things.
I see.
The family detention center, which the Biden administration is talking about converting into this this rapid release center, is a way to, I suspect, prevent the deportations of children who are arriving with their biological parents. Right now, it's illegal for the government to separate children from biological parents. So the fact that children and parents would have to go into even a 72-hour facility is something new. If children and families were arriving at the border during a time when asylum was in effect and the Trump administration essentially closed any road to asylum, any capacity to apply for asylum, but if the capacity to apply for asylum were still in effect, these children and parents wouldn't be separated anyway. They would be processed. They might, you know, have to do what's called a credible fear interview. And then most of them would be allowed to await the adjudication of their claims in the country without being processed through some center other than Customs and Border Protection. And it may be that, you know, one of these family detention centers will take the place of Customs and Border Protection facilities, which would be very good because those are certainly the most terrible of the government-run detention facilities. So if instead of being placed in a Clint or an Ursula, children and parents are being placed for up to no more than 72 hours in a more comfortable setting where you know, lights aren't on 24 hours a day and it isn't freezing cold and they actually have access to soap and toothbrushes, then that is certainly an improvement. But here's the issue. The issue is that the Office of Refugee Resettlement shelters, which are really detention centers in the United States, there are about 150 of them which are contracted with ORR. Because they're contracted with ORR, those facilities have to be state licensed, and they have to abide by certain rules and regulations in order to be state licensed. To have children in them. Those facilities have considerably reduced their bed capacity. And their claim is that they've reduced their bed capacity because of COVID and the need for social distancing and so forth. I can speak to that in a moment. Because they've reduced their bed capacity, they are now claiming that they're full. And we're back to the situation of 2019, where because OR facilities are full, they're backing up and they've now reopened these influx facility like Carrizo Springs in Texas and the dreaded horrible place Homestead, which I visited when it was open and which has now been reopened under, I believe, the name Biscayne, but is essentially the same facility still owned by the same profit-making company. Those influx facilities do not have to abide by the same rules as the contracted ORR facilities. So they are not licensed facilities. They do not have to be licensed by the state, and they are not overseen by the state. They are federal facilities on federal land. And we know that there is a variety of really terrible things that happen within these facilities. When those facilities become full, and we'll talk in a minute about why that's the case, then the system backs up into Customs and Border Protection facilities. Now, we're talking about children, two sets of children. We're talking about children who, both of these sets of children, by the way, are designated as unaccompanied. But many, many, many of these children actually arrive accompanied by sisters, brothers, uncles, aunts, grandparents.
So if they don't come with biological parents, they're just automatically classified as unaccompanied.
That is exactly right. They are separated from these people, many of whom to this child will represent a psychological parent. Yeah. A child doesn't distinguish between someone who has actually been the contributor of the egg and the sperm to create a biological relationship. A child has no attachment to that concept. The child's attachment is a psychological attachment. And if they are raised by parents, that psychological attachment is to that parent. And if they are separated from that parent, then they experience the kind of trauma that all of us learned about as people were seeing the horrific zero tolerance program unfold. But for children who many thousands, hundreds of thousands of children who are not raised by their own parents because their parents die or they can't or they're in other countries or they're murdered or they're abusive. For these children, the people who raise them, who may be aunts or uncles or siblings or grandparents, represent exactly the same psychological relationship as another child would have to their biological parent. Uniformly, unless they are deported, these children are separated from these people. They are separated uniformly from their their siblings, their aunts, their uncles, their grandparents. They are then redesignated as unaccompanied alien children, and they are put through the ORR detention system. This is in part what is backing up the ORR system, the fact that they are incarcerating children who should not be incarcerated, who should be allowed to remain with the people who represent their psychological parents or who may have brought them to reunite them with their parents.
And then what about those children who do arrive unaccompanied? And are there just in general larger numbers of people showing up at the border once Biden took office, you know, hoping perhaps that they might have a less cruel regime awaiting them?
Well, you know what? There are a number of things that are unfortunate here. It was entirely predictable that once the deterrence is cruelty, cruelty is deterrence plan of the Trump administration ended, that there would be more people at the border who needed processing, because all of those people were being kept out illegally. And of course, the numbers were growing. The other thing is that the conditions which force people out of their countries of origin have not changed. And there is no deterrence for people who are fleeing their countries of origin because they and their children are going to be murdered if they don't. And that represents a large number of the children and families who are coming to the border. So I will give you, you know, one example are our two children who were actually expelled under Title 42. They were 9 and 12 when they came to this country in July. Their mother is in the United States in legal proceedings. So she's here perfectly legally with their four siblings. She was unable to bring all of her children, but she had to flee because her children were being attacked by cartel members. And she left these two children in the care of her brother. Her brother was issued death threats and was murdered in June of last year. And the children were left completely on their own. And within a week or more, you know, barely 2 weeks, they themselves started receiving death threats from MS-13. Mm-hmm. And they have evidence of these death threats. They're terrifying videos. They received notes. And the 12-year-old took his 9-year-old sister by the hand and got her the hell out of there. And they found a caravan, they got to Guatemala, and they managed to get to the border of the United States and cross over. They were taken into CBP custody. They were told that they would be reunited with their mother, but instead, 48 hours later, they were driven through the night, about 5 or 6 hours, and at about 2 a.m, were loaded onto an airplane and flown back to Honduras, where they had no one to take care of them. And they had serious cartel criminal gang members who were hunting them. We have now had to work with the Honduran government to move these children 3 times to safe houses in Honduras because the cartel keeps finding where they are and keeps being on the verge of attacking them. And again, they have a mother who is in the United States under legal proceedings. There is no way to get these children to her. I'm now working with the Norwegian Refugee Council in Honduras to try to effect this, and working with 3 attorneys who have now taken on this case. But there is no means to get these children back to this country. If indeed they had come across as unaccompanied minors after Title 42 ended, they would have endured what many, many kids have endured. Which meant that they would have been taken into ORR custody. They would have been compelled to undergo a 14-day quarantine, which is longer than even the CDC recommends. They would have had to be, many of them, completely isolated from any other children with no programming and no psychological supports while they underwent this 14-day quarantine. Many of them have been For these children, they would have been, at the end of those 14 days, for unknown reasons, transferred to another ORR facility somewhere else in the country even though they might have been on the verge of being released, their mother might have submitted all of the data that was necessary to get them released. Instead of releasing them, they would have been taken to a plane, potentially exposed to COVID again, and flown to another OR facility where they might very well have undergone another 14-day quarantine. And meanwhile, their mother would have been required to submit an escalating set of documents. If she was lucky, she would have had a case manager who she was working with at these facilities who was sympathetic and would try to get these children out as quickly as possible. Though, if you think about it, two 14-day quarantines by themselves amount to a month of detention.
Right.
And it is also often longer than that. We have had children who were held for more than 3 months, even though they have parents who have all the documentation to demonstrate that they are parents here in this country. So this is what happened. You asked what happens with truly unaccompanied minors. And this is what happens with truly unaccompanied minors.
What would justice look like under Biden for those people who were separated under Trump and children and who continue to be separated because of a continuation of policies? And is anything that Biden is doing now, as far as you can tell, going to improve the treatment of migrants into the and asylum seekers into the U.S. So that, you know, those people escaping violence from particularly Central America?
I have to say the Biden administration has their hands full. So there are so many not only inhumane, but really, really atrociously cruel policies that I do believe the Biden administration is eager to undo. And we're seeing those efforts, although we wish they had started earlier. We wish they had prepared in the 2 months before he came into office so that things would be a bit less chaotic than they have been. But nonetheless, certainly the release of people from the Remain in Mexico program so that they can, children can reunite with many of these families were separated so that there was one parent and one child in the United States and another parent and other children forced to stay in Mexico for these 2 years. So some of these children and parents are reuniting for the first time in 2 years. You know, these children are 2 years older. They're seeing siblings who are 2 years older. It's really extraordinary. So I think that the first thing that they need to do is to get a broader appreciation of the children and families who've been traumatized by immigration policies, to not singularly focus on this single tranche of children who were separated under zero tolerance, which frankly is a policy that ended nearly 3 years ago. And yes, while there were 600 children who, well, maybe were not in contact with their parents, and certainly there should have been a better capacity to find these parents if indeed they could not be found. These children were relatively stable. They were, for the most part, with relatives. They have not been in detention. None of these children have been in detention over these past 3 years. But there are many other children who have been, and there are many other children who continue to suffer because of ongoing policies. And while I see the changes coming through Mayorkas and the Department of Homeland Security, which really desperately needs overhaul, And I do believe they're going to get to Customs and Border Protection, which is a culture which desperately needs overhaul. The place where I'm not seeing changes yet and which desperately need to be addressed is in the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And as you and I have talked about, but which your audience may not know, children who are detained in the United States on their own, whether they have family here or not, are detained not under the Office of Homeland Security, which detains families when families have been detained and detains adults, but instead are detained by something called the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which instead of being under DHS, as ICE and CBP are, falls under the Department of Health and Human Services. So it's Xavier Becerra who is in charge of the Department of Health and Human Services.
Well,
and
not quite yet, I believe. Is he still sort of awaiting confirmation?
Correct. He is awaiting confirmation. But what we are not yet seeing, and maybe that will make the difference, what we are not yet seeing are the absolutely critical alterations to the Office of Refugee Resettlement that must come about. Even the contracted shelters, which hold children, operate as rogue organizations. There's really no oversight. And if a child is lucky, they may end up in a good one with a good case manager. If a child is unlucky, they may end up in a bad one with a bad case manager. And we have really, my organization, which works with these children and families every single day, have really seen the range of the good, the bad, and the terrible around the treatment of these children, and the most critical issue of release, what children and families are forced to go through before these children are permitted to be released.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Amy, for joining us today. Where can people find out more about the work you do?
So my organization is called Every Last One. We are an organization that does rapid response, emergency intervention, stabilization, and we work on also expediting the release of children from government custody. And they can find it at our website, which is www.everylastone.org.
That's everylastone.org. We'll post a link to that from our website. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. And thank you for your ongoing concern and focus on these issues.
My guest is Dr. Amy Cohen, Executive Director and Co-Founder of Every Last One. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.